Today is Thursday, July 21st, 2011. This is episode 192.
Countless Screaming Argonauts is brought to you by Shane Ryan and Seth Curry Saves Duke, a blog featuring sports analysis on the country's two most hated teams, the Duke University Blue Devils and the New York Yankees.
Screaming Argonauts. I'm T-Fat-P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Max.
And I'm hot.
It's hot out, Max.
It's 101. It was 101 here today.
So let's just hop into the show. It's been a while since we've done this.
All right.
So I think I would like to call this show Three Questions for Max.
All right.
All right? I got three questions for you.
We can make it four because I.
Oh, we can make it 27.
Okay.
But I'm going to call it three questions for
three
Max.
Three questions for Max. Okay.
One is a history question.
All right.
One is a political question. And one is a survey honesty question.
All right. I'll give you answers to all of them.
Okay, here we go. We'll start with a history question. Do you know what today is, historically speaking?
I've heard recently that, but I don't think it's today, the end of the Joe DiMaggio hitting streak.
That could be a couple of days ago, I think.
I think
perhaps.
It was a couple of days ago. I think it's the 40th anniversary of the man first landing on the moon.
You're very, very close. It's the 42nd anniversary.
42nd.
Right. And it bookends with, what happened today.
The last space
shuttle
landing.
Last space shuttle landing.
Right.
So it's a nice pair of bookends.
Yeah.
So here's my question for you regarding history and space and NASA and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Do you think that we will ever see the space program be what it used to be? Or is this now the end of an era and now we're going to start something completely different that'll be?
I do think we've seen the end of an era. I'm sad about that because I liked the frenetic pace of the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs. I was a kid, obviously, then, and just was so excited about space. I never got excited about the shuttle, but I know now that huge, huge scientific discoveries were made, particularly with the Hubble telescope, and huge technical discoveries were made, particularly with the repair of the Hubble telescope, and I give you a quick anecdote, and this, I think, sums it up, because I think this is representative of most of the people in America. I was talking to one of our people in Canada at our Canadian site, and we were talking about politics, because I probably dragged it there. And he said, well, we're talking about a space program. He said, it's probably a huge part of your budget, and you have lots of debt issues. And I said, guess how much? And he said, well, I don't know, but it's probably a really big amount. I said, it's 0.5% of the budget. And he said, oh, really? That's not much at all. But there's this perception out there that we're spending so much money on the space program, when in fact what we've gotten is incalculably vast. They're talking about dark matter. They're talking about dark energy. They're talking about a huge new kind of understanding of the workings of the universe itself. And that's all through the shuttle program. As much as I love the Apollo program, the shuttle program is still gaining us great science.
Well, let me just say this. When I looked at and saw that it was the 42nd anniversary of man walking on the moon, my first thought was that essentially – the space program has been going on for as long as I've been alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me sad today to say that Atlantis was the last space shuttle. This program is now over. And I think that you're right. I think that the American public does not understand the small amount of money that is spent for all of this scientific gain.
I'm nodding my head.
And you know, the thing is, I saw an interesting fact. The United States last year spent more money on air conditioning tents in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Wow.
As we did on the NASA space program.
And we're all for, you know, taking care of the soldiers.
It's not about that. What it's about is that people don't understand. Like you said, this Canadian who thought it was a huge amount of the budget and then finds out that it's less than one half of 1%.
Right.
You know, we don't understand how much of the budget goes to certain things. We just look at the budget and say, well, we don't need space at $8 billion, so we'll get rid of it. Or we don't want Planned Parenthood at $4 billion, so we'll get rid of it.
Right.
Not realizing that that doesn't even cover the cost of Army boots for a year. That doesn't even begin to cover the cost of, you know, the interest on Medicaid.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't cover any of that stuff. Right. And I think that that's our politicians' fault for not hammering home that fact.
Yes. Well, and this is my fundamental argument with the Democrats. They lack the ability to enunciate a clear message. They just are terrible at message. Whereas the Republicans, hugely on message discipline.
And it costs us.
Yeah.
You know, and my fear is that NASA will become the healthcare system in the United States today.
Really?
You'll have all these private companies, and you'll have nobody talking to anybody else, and, you know, some people doing it on the cheap, and some people, you know, taking the money off the top, and this and that, and this and that, and... You know, it just won't be the same space program that we had before.
I told the guy in Canada, I said, do you realize we spend $650 billion a year on the Defense Department and that we're running 8 carrier battle groups now? I'm pretty sure that's the right number, but I'm not 100% sure. If we saved $100 billion just out of the Defense Department, that's $1 trillion over 10 years. We're never going to fight an 8 carrier battle group war.
Ever again.
Ever again. Even Afghanistan. Huge war, very expensive, and Iraq at the same time, and Libya. What are we doing with all of this money for defense, which some people would say is all this money for war? You know, I think you brought up the F-22 weeks ago. And the whole idea
the plane that we don't need, yeah, sure.
But that has manufacturing in 48 states. It's a jobs program.
Right. It's okay in some people's mind to have a jobs program to make a plane that we don't need, but it's not okay to have a stimulus program to create jobs that we
right.
do need.
Well, here's another thing that I think Americans get wrong, and I've had this argument with many people, and I don't get people to agree with me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. War is not stimulative. In the Defense Department, is not generally stimulative. The money gets blown up or parked. You know, you don't get a lot of benefit other than the original purchase from an Abrams tank.
How many of those old ICBM missiles do we have that are just rotting away somewhere, you know?
Right. Now, I think it was wise for Reagan and Obama to deal those away. Because they had probably gotten to be unreliable and technologically outdated anyway. You know,
sure.
So you get some political gain for getting rid of them. But I don't know. We don't want to make this all about the politics and the Defense Department.
No, because now I have a politics question for you.
Okay.
Question two.
All right.
Okay. Now, this past week, there's been a lot of ink dedicated to Michelle Bachmann and her headaches.
Yeah. A really interesting question. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, here, my question to you is her migraine headaches a politically viable issue?
Well, and the way that I've heard it phrased, the question phrased on MSNBC, is it a sexist issue? And
okay, and I'll tell you what, when I was thinking of asking you this question,
yeah,
I have a response to that.
All right.
So let's deal with one thing at a time, and
okay,
we'll come back to that one. So is Michelle Bachmann's migraine headache issue a politically valid point in an election?
From what I've heard, and I have paid attention to this just today, it is, and I'll tell you why. She has gone to the emergency room for treatment of these and has been, if I remember correctly, debilitated for up to 4 days with
them. In July of 2010, she missed 8 House votes while being treated for migraines.
Now, I have sympathy for her. I get migraines myself, but oddly, my migraines don't hurt. They do give me a bit of a blind spot in my vision, which is weird, and generally Tylenol or aspirin or something makes them go away. So I wouldn't say that they were debilitating to me, but I honestly think that the severity of them makes them an issue in a time when Kennedy's back would have been an issue. And
well, that was that, absolutely. And my next point was that we had a president who had polio.
Right.
And it was in a wheelchair,
right?
That hardly anybody knew about because it was hidden from the public.
Because the relationship of the press and the politicians was totally different.
We had a president who was injured in the war,
right,
who I understand at times had to be severely medicated to be able to even just get out of bed.
Right. And okay, I think that's a legitimate issue. I saw a little feature on the presidential yacht on the Discovery Channel.
Uh-huh.
And he had a bar taken out and had a little elevator put in the boat so that he could go upstairs because it was so difficult for him. Would that be a legitimate issue?
Well, I don't know. Back in 1972, we had a vice presidential candidate who revealed that he had depression and was taking medication for it and who was dropped from the ticket.
Well, yeah, I heard somebody talking about that just now and it reminded me that he had electric shock treatments.
Yes, and he was taking Thorazine. I mean, this, you know, we're talking
really
heavy-duty stuff.
Thorazine, yeah, for depression?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, now here's where – this is where I think that it turns the corner on
– sexism?
I wonder if you could raise the same issue about our current president who is trying to give up smoking, who I imagine as a 1 to 2-pack-a-day man at one point in time.
Really? He was that bad?
Is going through some significant nicotine withdrawal. Now, I've never smoked, but I know lots of people who have, and I know lots of people who have difficulty in quitting smoking, and I'm not sure that I would want some of the people that I know with their hand over the big red button if they were going through nicotine withdrawal.
That's an interesting point. He does not officially smoke, but you can gather from the Politico's talk about him that he's out on
right,
the veranda. He doesn't smoke inside, having a cigarette from time to time.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much. Should it be a bigger issue? Maybe so.
Okay, so now to take it a step further, you talk about sexism. Okay. So what about PMS? All right. And the flip side of that, what about Senator McCain and the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder?
As far as McCain goes, his past being tortured was widely known.
Acknowledged.
Yeah, and was made an issue in advancing his story.
Right,
and they did it
because he's a hero.
Right, but
and that's okay. I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah.
My issue is that did he have a clean bill of health in terms of post traumatic stress disorder? He had to have experienced it somehow.
One would think
so, and you wonder again. So the question about Bachmann really is about medical histories in general.
Yeah.
Are medical histories, or should medical histories, be a open book for the campaign?
See, I think that while it's okay to say we want to see your tax forms, it's not okay to lay bare someone's complete medical history.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want mine laid bare. It's too personal. You're too vulnerable. On the other hand, I do think it's fair to say, Senator McCain, do you feel in light of the abuse that you suffered that you're able to handle the stresses of the job? I also think that you would get crucified if you said, Congresswoman Bachman, do you think that once a month you're able to handle the stresses of the job?
Right. Sure.
First of all, that's sort of known territory, and people are going to think it or not think it on their own anyway. It's not a surprise that a woman can, have these issues. And whether or not this particular woman does or doesn't, I think is part of the evaluation process, and I think is outside the lines, is forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
But debilitating days in the dark in bed, headaches, I would say were a legitimate issue for Tom Eagleton or John McCain or John Kennedy or anybody. And we have a call coming in.
Okay, so we got Josh. That's where it turns the corner to sexism.
I think that's right.
But it still doesn't deal with the issue of whether or not you would call her incapacitated. I mean, she released a doctor's note that said that her ability to function was not impeded by the migraines. She released a statement that said that same thing. But today, somebody on the inside of her campaign said that she definitely was incapacitated, that there were days when she sat in the dark all day, and could not function. So,
yeah, but she sat in the dark all day with all of her whole freaking coven. I saw anything about her headache.
Yeah, all of the 28 kids that she's got to feed that aren't actually
there. Yeah,
they
don't mention the fucking pentagram in the dark.
I think she's debilitated strictly on intellect.
Intellect alone.
Yeah, I think she's batshit insane.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one to hold that opinion.
Yes.
That.
I mean, I think she's utterly disqualified. She said that the census is against the Constitution.
Right.
How do you get to be a lawyer without having read Article 1?
Well, you go to that college that she went to where,
Yeah, I think that's it.
Nobody passes the bar exam.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're a woman or you got a nutsack. If you're not physically capable of doing it, don't do it.
Yeah. But a friend of ours suffers from migraines, and I've seen in the dark, and when it came time to suck it up and get moving, she was able to do that too. So I don't think she missed a lot of work for that, or any, maybe, and has a position of responsibility. So I don't know. I think it's up to the voter to evaluate that part, just like they evaluate the fact that she's batshit insane.
Right. So, Joshua, we started this program, I called it Three Questions for Max. So we talked a little bit about history. Today is the day that the 42nd anniversary of man walking on the moon and the end of the space shuttle program. Then we talked about Michelle Bachman and migraines and whether or not people's medical history impacts there is a campaign issue. So now I'm gonna hazard a guess to say that being Irish, you probably drink tea.
Yeah, I have a cup of tea, sure.
Okay. So I want to talk to you about this interesting little non-scientific study. Okay, there's a company out in Los Angeles called Honest Tea. What they did was they placed unattended racks of cold bottled tea on street corners in a handful of different cities. And on the racks was a sign that said, please pay $1 per bottle. Now, the Honest Tea sells for about $3 a bottle. So $1 a bottle is a heavy discount. they then kept track of, with hidden cameras, how people handled that. And what they found out was that people in Seattle were the people who paid the most often. 97% of the time they paid. Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Cincinnati all paid about 96. Los Angeles only paid 87% of the time. And New York ended up paying 86% of the time. So the question is what does a survey like this tell us, Max? Does it tell us that people in Seattle are more honest than people in New York or L.A.? Does it tell us that people are addicted to tea? Does it tell us that people don't have cash in hand? What does it tell us?
I think it would be a mistake to extend this to a whole personality profile of a whole city. I think what it tells us is that people in Seattle are more likely to pay a dollar for a bottle of tea that's available to them with a sign that says that please pay a dollar. People in New York are slightly more likely, I'm assuming that the ones that didn't pay a dollar took it for free.
Right, basically.
And that's stealing, and so there's an increased percentage of petty larceny.
I think the difference is staggering when you think about it. If you put 100 bottles there, what this says is that in Seattle, 99 people paid a dollar and one person didn't.
Right.
But if you're in New York, 86 people paid a dollar and 14 didn't.
Right.
14 times the rate.
Yeah, so can I jump in here?
Sure.
One pool, it has, 700,000 people in it? And one has 8 million. You're going to have your bigger bucket of arseholes.
Right.
It's just a percentage.
Right.
How many people in New York on the corner walked by the glass of tea in 30 minutes? I'll bet you 7 times more people than walk by it out in the Pacific Northwest.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And your sample has more car dealers, more whores, more drug addicts, more fucking coffee drinkers. That's the whole problem in Seattle. They're, free tea.
It would be interesting to see. There is, my understanding is, an extensive homeless teenager population in Portland, Oregon. And I would like to see how Portland stacks up next to Seattle. Perhaps the people, the overall average sort of comfort factor, have a job, have a place to go among the Seattle population is better. You can make an argument. It's there that people in Seattle are more moral than people in New York, but that's an awful lot to extend on one test like that.
Well, this article came from Freakonomics, and you know how fascinated I am with the stuff that they do.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing about Freakonomics, and I was thinking about it again today, is that people do what they have an incentive to do.
Right.
And so my question back to you is there a greater incentive to follow the collective mindset in Seattle than there is in New York?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know whether it's an incentive one way or the other, but what was interesting was that they noticed, the Freakonomics guys noticed, that the two cities that had very, very high rates of honesty, Seattle, which was the highest at 99%, had a temperature that day of 67 degrees.
That's where I was going.
San Francisco, which was in the second group with the 96% or whatever, had a temperature of 74 degrees.
Minus 40, yeah.
The temperature in New York was 95, last place. The temperature in L.A. was 92, next to last place.
Well, so then you have to throw out. See, that's like I said.
Well, there's your incentive.
Right, right.
But it's a reverse incentive.
Sure.
No, it's an incentive to say, I'm not paying for this. It's 95 degrees out.
Right, right,
drink.
To steal it.
If you're stupid enough to leave it here, I'm taking it.
I'll tell you.
There's no. But you know what? There's a lot more to do. The Seattle people, what else have I got to do other than stop and take money out and be nice? You know, I got a subway train to catch. I got to go to work. You know?
Yeah.
You're melting on the sidewalk. I get it.
As you were asking the question, I was thinking, I'd pay the dollar. But I'm thinking about how hot it was here today.
Right.
And if I didn't have a dollar and that tea was there,
you'd take it.
I'd have taken it. And I'm the same me.
Right.
You know, I don't think that's a good test.
Okay. So that's my three questions. We still have a few more minutes, Max.
The first thing I wanted to talk about just quickly is under what's pissing off Max, because this is always something. The other day, Moody's threatened to downgrade the rating of American bonds. And I think the other rating agencies maybe did this too. There's two or three of them. And it pisses me off because those same rating agencies were rating all that junk bond shit that they knew was shit as AAA, and they were taken to court and charged with fraud, and they said, hey, it's just an opinion.
Right.
And I don't like this. Oh, it's fine that we screwed the country, and now we want the country to help bail us out. And now when it turns around that we have a chance to screw the country again by being honest, fuck them. So that's my fuck you, and I didn't mean to do that. That's my fuck you for the day. Moody's can go fuck themselves.
It's getting to the point, Max, where it's not a really good show. unless we get a Max fuck you.
Well,
isn't the problem the amount of stock we put in stuff like Moody's? I'm going to get a B-, you know, and it makes a difference in the market and in the money and serious monetary decisions. And like they say, you know, you can do all the study you want, and I'm sure they know their shit better than me. But it's a fucking opinion.
Yeah,
it's a guess.
Well, that's a really good point, Josh, and that means to me that their opinion was worth shit on the way up, and it's worth shit now. I don't care to hear what Moody's has to say about the American debt situation.
I guess we'll end on a serious note. All right. Well, good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Miss Nicole of 8 Beer Sampler Productions. You've been listening to Max and T-Fab-P, the fabulous penguin of Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record. Listen to their podcast adventures at csapodcast.blogspot.com or download it free from the iTunes podcast store. Just search Countless Screaming Argonauts. The boys love to hear from you, so email them at csapodcast@gmail.com. Finally, if you want to show your allegiance to the show, pick up some CSA swag and help make the boys famous. You can purchase hats, shirts, and mugs, along with other appropriate gear, at Cafe Press. Click the link on their webpage. And thanks for listening.